Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
Something wrong with the something wrong with the That's still one of the hardest intros for a podcast. Anyway, welcome back to episode 36 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's me, Julian, and today I am back solo, dolo, as most of these episodes have been happening lately. I do want to start by giving a huge thank you to Mama. I know you're listening to this episode. The reception from this last episode, episode 35, when we spoke in depth about, not necessarily about the incident that happened to Charlie Kirk, but more so the state and climate of this country from a social and political standpoint. I could not have done that conversation alone. It was very helpful to have my mom, who's incredibly well-spoken and educated, offer her perspective, and also just hearing her perspective from her time as a young woman, being in the 60s and experiencing the rise of some other hate groups and some insane things that, you know, we grew up watching and hearing about. It was cool to have her in the room and share what the climate of the world looked like at that time. It's very good. Breath of fresh air, all things considered, even though the topic at hand was quite sad. But I did want to start by reading some comments, because I feel like I need to integrate more of these the comments into the portion of the show. So this is from Jen. Jen wrote, "Julian, this is such a powerful episode. As both a sociologist and a psychotherapist, I loved hearing the dialogue between you and your mom. There was so much into intergenerational wisdom and insight from both of you. I also appreciate how you look, how you took information that can be really complex and made it accessible and digestible to viewers. It would be dope if you leaned into more content like this." Well, thank you, Jen, very much. I think today's episode is going to be my best at speaking to the residual of this last episode, and going more into some of these topics, because I really do feel, and I'm such a firm believer in this. This is what really, when I was a kid, would drive me to write so often, and even now, is when I say something or when I put something physically out into the universe, whether it be on paper, into a microphone, or in a conversation with friends or loved ones, it exists. I'm not like the most religious person, but I'd probably lean more on the spiritual side. But I really do believe that when you have a release, when something releases from you, there is a part of you that goes with it, and there's a part of you that can live it out within the world itself. So to have that conversation with my mom, really, obviously the conversation in itself made me think, but then I was also able to continue that conversation with other people in my life. Like, I had it with some friends actually over this weekend, and I also had it with my therapist this past Friday. We had a really, really great session. It's funny, the reason in which I went in there however many months ago, we've so far gone past, not to say that I've mastered what I went in there, I'm still very much working on that, but now we are talking so much about topical things and the things that are consuming my my mind on a daily basis that has become quite exhausting, and not in a good way. I'm been acutely aware of how much space toxicity and conflict is occupying in my brain on a daily basis, and it's really rubbing me the wrong way, and I think it's wearing off on me physically. I think it's leading to like a lethargic state and a need to kind of like be alone or rest or take naps, but not naps in a healthy way. And quite frankly, like a nap as a recharge just to wake up and consume more bullshit content. I'm really working on breaking the grip of the doom scroll cycle, along with a couple other addictions. None of which, mind you, being drugs and alcohol. These are just, I think a couple things that I want to work on are the residual of being someone that happened to be born at the time I was at. And I want to get a better hold on the phone addiction. That's my main priority, is scrolling and being force-fed content that I'm not even looking for. I'm being told is what I want, and giving that content my attention. And then also, there are so many articles about how short form content is really staggering and disruptive for your brain. And there's all these newer studies that say
This is the it has the same effect as having a night of drinking. Obviously, not the physical effect in terms of like a hangover or like dehydration to the body itself, but in terms of the chemical imbalance that's occurring in your mind, it seems to be just as jarring or disorienting as consuming drugs or alcohol, which is something that I try to steer clear of. It's interesting. Like when we talk about phone addiction, it seems so taboo because it's so new. It's so us. It's like it's become a part of us in a daily necessity. And there's no physical harm per se that comes from it. You can't, like, you don't gain weight for carrying this around too much. You don't, you know, have physical like a physical scar from being on this thing, but it doesn't mean that the pain in which it inflicts is internal. It's in your mind, and not in your mind, but it could be done to your brain. And I really want to work on that. This isn't something I've been diagnosed. This is something that I'm just like acutely aware of within myself. I always have this tendency to re-examine my relationship with items, foods, drinks, just things in general. I always do like a self intake and I'll say, hey, I don't like how much I use this or how much I rely on this, or I have a bit of a sweet tooth. I eat quite a bit of candy. You get to that point where it's like the craving is one thing, but to always give into that craving is another. And I feel like we're currently, I'm at a losing battle with this guy, and I need to, I want to not crave it. And usually when I put my foot down in that regard, I make the changes that can break that cycle or at least disrupt that pattern just to prove to myself that I don't need this thing. But the phone, I will say, has been one of the more difficult things to do. So anyway, thank you, Jen, for that comment. Let's keep reading here. The following comment from James Terry: congratulations to your father and the other gentleman for getting inducted into the High School Hall of Fame. Yeah, I'm happy I got to record that after the event, immediately after the event with my mom. It really is pretty awesome. And I grew up, you know, hearing about my dad's accomplishments athletically, and it, you know, just becomes the norm. It becomes what you expect. And then when things like this happen, especially when I'm here to celebrate with him and see these things happen and enjoy them with him, it really is extraordinary and so special. My dad is one of the most incredible athletes of his generation. So it's just awesome to, you know, you go from me being a kid and me myself competing and hearing about all these stories about my dad, but to see the state recognize him and to see him get memorialized forever is very special. And I will always hold that dear to my heart. So shout out to the committee for making the decision, the right decision, obviously, for letting my dad in into the hall. So let's go. Let's do a couple more comments. This is really fun. I'm really enjoying this part. You and your mom are cooking this episode. She's very knowledgeable. I will say, look, like a lot of these comments like this, here goes another one from Lisa. I was telling my mom the same thing. They were always, yeah, like I have always said I've been so privileged to have, but my both parents are great, but in particular with my mom to be, she was so smart and just always a great person to have these common conversations with. And it's really fun for me to have my own show and my own platform to give my, like, to platform my mom's voice, because I there are a few people that I would turn to, and obviously I'm super biased, but I truly respect and love her, how she, not only her opinion on things, but how she articulates things. And to the initial comment from Jen, like how she makes it digestible and really brings it down on a level where you don't feel stupid, you don't feel like you're under attack, or you have to have a base level of knowledge to understand what's going on. My mom is a former educator. Actually, she still continues to educate every now and then. She's to teach, I should say. But she's really carries that skill set into every conversation. She'll meet you at the ground floor and then explain as to how she got to her conclusion, and along the way invites you in to offer, either, you know, continue on the conversation, offer pushback, and then, you know, this is a matter of explaining back and forth. The way in which real proper dialogue and, you know, speech should be happening, but doesn't seem to be happening these days. It's a lot of telling and less listening, which is, God, man, I've just been in like a, in a rut when it comes to following anything that has to do with our political system. Unfortunately, we're going to keep that momentum going at the start of this episode. We have the first renderings of the UFC White House fight, which is slated for July 4th, Independence Day next year. Here, let's read this little blurb here. The UFC continues to plan its trip to the White House, and not everyone is optimistic with the promotion. On Friday, UFC CEO Dana White unveiled a series of renders showing off what the proposed July 4th, 2026 Independence Day extravaganda event might look like on Fight Night. Details are still developing on how the UFC plans to overcome all the logistical challenges that come with hosting a show that will require top security, a worthy lineup of fighters, and a little luck in regards to weather. But President Trump fully supported the concept and appears all systems are go. We love a good distraction in America. And this is the thing. This country has done plays like this before in other ways to just kind of keep things moving and keep people distracted. I think distractions work in one of two ways. Like, there is a sect of people that are obviously celebrating this and think this is the coolest thing ever. And you know what? Kudos to them. I'm not here to tell them why they should be focused on maybe all the money that's going to go into the renovation of the lawn and the security could go into affordable, you know, housing or groceries or, you know, tax reductions or just a check that could put food on somebody's plate. But who am I? Or healthcare. How about that? How about we put that money, redirect that UFC money to healthcare? That sounds, what a crazy idea. I'd rather get someone get kicked in the head and get CTE instead of feed my children. So I don't even want to focus on that. I want to focus on, like, it's smart politically, because when Trump obviously announces something like this and he knows most of the country is going to be up in arms and think it's a bullshit and a waste of time and they're going to get very loud and vocal about it, it gives him time. And this is like a political tactic. It's not even a Trump thing per se, but it gives him time to, like, green light other egregious things that are happening under the radar, you know, like when what's another example of this? Obviously, I'm not placing blame on Trump or the government for Charlie Kirk's killing, but on the day in which it happened, it was either that day or the following day, the Congress or the House, like, unanimously voted against, like, releasing the Epstein files, whatever. Like, it's stuff like that where it's like, here's the shiny diversion. All right, now we're going to funnel in, you know, here's the Trojan horse. And then inside is all the real shit that we want to really worry about and pass and mandate. So nobody really, you know, there's no crowd swell for the thing that really will affect people or matter. It's just this UFC thing. Look, it's stupid. Duh. It is a distraction. Duh. Let's try to find the other things that are going to be happening currently right now, and then also maybe around the July 4th next year that are in the pipeline as well that deserve our attention. This is what Trump wants to do. This is what the president has the power to do. Yes, it's stupid. There's nothing we can do about it. I do think the biggest thing is it is a massive security risk, and the current state of, like, our open public debate forums are quite shitty. The Trump incident in Butler, Pennsylvania, obviously with Charlie Kirk in Utah. Yes, this is taking place in DC. Yes, DC security is top notch. Now it's National Guard level security. But it's going to be like a mass military migration for this event. So it doesn't mean that risk is averted. There are many ways to attack people, which we've seen, not just bullets. So this is just, you know, sometimes you just make it too easy for people to get in harm's way. So hopefully nothing happens, but, you know, there's nothing settling about building out an octagon on the South Lawn. I can't believe that is a real sentence that I just said. God, what are we doing? Okay. What else happened? Since we're talking about UFC and fireworks and showmanship, Charlie Kirk's funeral, which looked like, you know, the WWE showdown, SmackDown, was insane. I really, this is the thing. I tried so hard to not get on and talk politics, but when certain things happen, you just kind of have to pick up where your heart wants you to go. The fireworks display, the show that they put on, I see all the memes. Like, this looks like CM Punk's intro should be playing over this. It's very, again, it's very much distraction leaning and diverting attention from real things. And also, Trump is like masterfully using this to like fluff up a distraction to just excuse anything else that he wants to push through. And let's not get it confused. Like, this was a rally. This wasn't a funeral. These aren't how funerals are run, or this isn't how people are memorialized. Like, this was, you know, this is a level of conditioning by weaponizing God and faith. But just now we're repackaging that term as turning point. So now all of a sudden, you know, faith and turning point are intertwined. And if you're going to be religious, you have to believe in turning point, because those are one and one. You can't separate the two. If you believe in God, then you must believe in Charlie Kirk. They're doing this weave. Remember when Trump went on Flagrant and said, "I'm the master of the weave"? He said that in regards to ducking questions. But I think it also applies with like falsely conflating two things together, which the right does a really good job of. You know, this was like a 10-hour live stream, which like glorified military enlistment and like a lot of biblical jargon, none of which these people live by. This is like it is at its core, this is a machine continuing to push buttons in a machine in which they're the creators of the machine. There's like a psychosis that is pushing this machine, and they are continuing to use every single moment to forward the agenda. I said it when I spoke with my mom last week, and I'll repeat it again. This was never about Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk is simply a tool to continue to push the agenda in which Trump and his cabinet have always wanted to push towards the finish line. Poor Charlie Kirk is becoming a martyr in the story of Trump's America. They don't give a... The homie said, "Yo, construction's going crazy, though. Have you seen the lawn?" when they asked him about his death. Like, it's just... He can't pretend to care less. He also, of course, because he can't touch a stage without making a moment or making the announcement about him. God forbid he dedicates his time on that podium to just mourning the loss of his friend. Trump did go up there and say, "Tomorrow..." Here's a quote. "Tomorrow will be the, quote, biggest announcement medically in the U.S. history. I think we found an answer to autism. We know that RFK and Trump have had this hyper focus on autism, which is such a low hanging like button just to press to get the attention of their constituents. It is odd because you're saying you're focusing so much on autism, but at the same time, you're cutting funds for autism research and just general medical research. It's just, again, things aren't adding up. Another thing that Trump said, and again, with the keep in mind, this is Trump pushing forward his agenda, even against what Charlie Kirk himself would have done. Here's a quote from Trump. He, referring to Charlie Kirk, did not hate his opponents. He wanted the best for them. That's where I disagreed with Charlie. I hate my opponents, and I don't want the best for them. That's our president. Again, reflecting on speaking with my mom, I did say that a part of me just misses when things would go awry domestically or even globally with our politics, that we would always try to find it and return to the center and return to, okay, we got to preserve democracy. This is the very thing. We're all Americans. Let's be sure to, at our core, align with the foundation of this country. And things like this, these things that Trump keeps saying, "I don't agree with my opponents, I don't wish the best for them," that's like fascism, dictator, like that's a borderline, like, you know, hate speech. Like, you're wishing harm onto people that don't agree with you. You're not even open to the thought of speaking with them. You want nothing but the worst to happen to them. Like, that stuff, like a kid says that stuff, you know, in the spirit of this wrestling event that he's so focused on, that's like a WWE promo role. Like, this isn't what the leader of the free world should be saying about other political people. It's quite disheartening, but we're so numb to it that there's no grand reaction. There's just an expectation, but that expectation just reinforces that behavior. So it's really bad. Like, it's if you don't call it out, then it becomes normal. But now we're at the part where we're so numb to it, we're not really necessarily calling it out. So now that is the normal, but then that's the normal just for him. So now it's like we're kind of in turn excusing that behavior from just him. So when other political people say this, it's like a huge deal, because it's like, whoa, you haven't earned the right to say that. You haven't numbed us to the point where you always, you know, shit on other people or cuss out your constituents in Congress. That's odd of you. But this behavior, Trump has done a lot of work to work himself in this lane in which no other political figure has done, where he can say whatever the fuck he wants, and he's not getting the reaction that he should be getting for the words that are coming out of his mouth. One of Obama's biggest scandals wasn't even something he said. It was just a suit that he chose to wear for Easter. Remember the tan suit scandal? There's a fucking Wikipedia page about that. There's a Wikipedia page about this suit that the man wore on Easter. Meanwhile, Trump just said, I hate my opponents and I don't want the best for them. And that's just another blip on the timeline. Another comment that I meant to bring up from the episode was someone suggested that I get into politics. You should be in politics. Your views are equal and you have a good soul. This is from Kyle Hill Eats. Thank you, Kyle. I've always said it's impossible for me not to care about politics. I think a lot of me is infatuated by the political scene, but I do not care for what politics does to the people that are heavily involved with it. And what I mean by that is anybody that I know that gets into politics has a generally speaking, a good heart, a strong mission, and their purpose for stepping forward into that arena is very spirited and leading with love. But then politics becomes your identity, and the machine of politics will overtake the very thing in which you sought to disrupt when you joined. So meaning, depending on who you're getting your money from, we're seeing right now, like, AIPAC is public enemy number one in the political sphere. And a lot of people that came in to the scene or have now put the better interests of another country over the interests of their own constituents, a country that's thousands of miles away. Somehow they're so deeply invested in them, but the people in which the communities that they serve are, you know, homeless or worrying about things like that. And not to say I would fall for that and be compromised by those donations or those people, but I don't want to surround myself with those kind of people. Like, it's exhausting. I led this episode talking about my phone. It's exhausting online consuming all this content and all this hate. I also don't play the game of politics very well. I'm quite blunt. I will fight for my beliefs, and I will be quite vocal about them. I think, like, the example that we can look to in my life is, like, obviously what happened with the previous at Rory and Mall show. Like, I saw the writings on the wall. I even tried to play middleman and play peacemaker. So in the political comparison here, I was the guy that was trying to, like, keep shit afloat and make sure everybody was, you know, we're all on the same side here between certain people on the team. And then when that coin got flipped on me, I was like, what the hell? And then, you know, at the same time, I'm fighting for my financial gain, my deserved financial gain. And then I kind of got strung along with that. So it's like, there, like, the politics of that alone were exhausting and, like, really put me in a physically, mentally and physically ill space. I was like, I actually got sick because of that nonsense. And it took, you can see by watching my earlier episodes, it took months for me to get over that. And I'm still currently, you know, finding my voice within regards to that particular situation. So, like, in some facet of my life, like, there, everyone has found their way in, like, some, the middling or the some political sphere of their work, their friend group, whatever, what have you. And I've done that a few times, not just there, but with friends and stuff as well. And it's like, I, that is, it's truly exhausting and it's all encompassing. And I don't want to do that with people that don't have the greater, the democracy, the interest of the greater good at the forefront. If you're trying to find a resolution just to, just so you can continue to get funding from the people that pad your pockets in your campaign, I have zero interest in working with you or getting to know you, which unfortunately is how a lot of politics, the nature of this industry works. And for that, I'm out. I can't do that. Let's lighten the mood a bit. I, over this past weekend, went to the great state, our neighboring state, the Dirty Jurs, to the Rutgers-Iowa football game. Two of my friends are guys that are from Iowa, and we last minute Friday got tickets to go to the Rutgers-Iowa game. And man, I haven't been to a college football game in... I honestly don't think I can't put I don't know, like it's been a very long time. Shea Stadium, SHI, which is very funny. I kept saying Shea Stadium, which is, wow, what a stadium. It seated that was the largest crowd capacity game ever at Rutgers. I'm happy to be part of history. It was over 55,000 people. It was the blackout game. And Iowa came into town and whooped that ass. It was fun to be on the heel side and root for my friends and their team. But let's see here. Mike, the situation from Jersey Shore, was there. They had fireworks going off every 2 minutes. A lady with a baton twirler, like blowing fire and smoke. They had one of the coolest halftime performances I've ever seen. That included a full marching band doing formations on the field, and it's so Jersey. Some of the formations were like, and when Rutgers, we come back home, there's like the PA is doing like the voiceover of the scene, and then the marching band gets in formation and they all light up, and it's, you see on the Jumbotron, it's exit 9. Like, it is so New Jersey to a T. And then you have all the drones coming in from overhead, forming like the Rutgers R. I mean, it was, what a damn show. It made me want to go to more college football games. I certainly know that. That's a fact. Also, Rutgers does not hold expenses when it comes to production budget. They were doing, I know how much pyro costs to do it like a Barclays show. They had lining the stadium. I mean, they had more and more fireworks, pyro, and just like, just logistically, how to do all that is just insane. It sucks for them that they lost, but the team I wanted to win won. No hate against Rutgers, though. Like, they put on a hell of a show. The game itself was great. A lot of touchdowns. 5 touchdowns in the first quarter. Game started with a 100-yard return from the Iowa off kickoff. But yeah, just a really, really fun experience. I wanted to mention that, and shout out to everybody that put that show together. I mean, it was incredible. I am going to a show this weekend. I'm going to go to Anderson .Paak and Knowledge, aka No Worries, at with some friends at Paramount, Brooklyn Paramount, which is going to be sick. So if you see me there, say what up. I love that venue, and I'm super excited to see .Paak. I always see him when he's in New York, but just under DJ sets. So it'll be good to see him like sing and do the drums and shit and actually like perform. I haven't seen him like actually perform in a really long time. What else is going on? I just had a busy weekend. I caught up with a lot of friends. I watched a lot of football. I feel like this is my year for NFL. I watched damn near, the last 2 weekends I've watched a lot of NFL, which is very uncharacteristic of me. I was pulling for the Giants at the Sunday night game. They couldn't get it done. I did say, though, if they played like they did against the Cowboys, they would have won that game. But the boys can't find a win, man. It's funny seeing Daniel Jones now with the undefeated start over in Indy, which is, man, that is such a story of a giant career. You started in the Giants, get your fucking back kicked in for a few seasons, make the world think you're the worst person ever to touch a football. And then you get a fresh start and you start undefeated. Saquon Barkley's running out of his mind. Not that he ever sucked on the Giants, but he obviously didn't have the chance to be the talent caliber that he is over there on the Eagles. Eagles with one of the craziest wins That blocked kick and return touchdown at the end of the game as the clock expired. Yeah, just excited for football. Excited for the weather to turn. Yeah, I don't know what it is about this time of year, but it always makes me think more. And this is my public enemy number one, my phone here. So I challenge you, as I will challenge myself, to reduce your phone time, your screen time. And again, everything is in a realistic moderation. I'm not saying go from, you know, 6 hours a day to one. Like, be realistic with yourself. Shed a half hour or an hour every week or every day and see how, watch that add up over time. And just lean more into your community. Similar messaging for how I ended last episode. Lean more into your community, your friends, and have conversations. I had some, actually, in the spirit of that, I had some uncomfortable conversations with a few people that I know over the weekend. One regarding the company Palantir. My friend did not know what they did or why they were bad. He thought they were, you know, good, and I didn't. Instead of, you know, I wanted to get rah, like, violent at first, but then he said, "Hey man, like, I just don't know, like, what did they do?" And we had a really great conversation, which was awesome to hear. And then I had another friend say something that really disturbed me, you know, saying, "Why is all this stuff that's currently going on matters? It doesn't affect our lives." I'm like, that is a extremely privileged thing to say. And what a luxury to be living in in a place where you can openly say that as if that's like the general consensus for everybody in this room, which still honestly is bothering me. So yeah, we'll see if I end up talking, bring that up again. But yeah, guys, I still have quite a bit to do tonight. I really wish I could speak more about other topics, but unfortunately this is all I've been thinking about. I haven't been listening on new music. I know Cardi B's album dropped. I have not listened to it. I read a couple of the reviews. Looks like it's fine. Looks like it's good. I'm happy that her return is going well. It's awesome for her to take this risk. One that I was pretty adamant about on the old show that she never needed to do again. So to actually commit to it and do it and seemingly connect, like, good for her. Shout out Cardi. I need to lean into more music news, and cleanse myself of this political sphere, because I react physically to news and to things. And, this is taking quite a toll on me. So, yeah, we'll see how I'm feeling next week. But until then, I love you all. Thank you once again for tuning in every week. Yeah, I drop, you know, comments on YouTube. I'm always on there for the debuts, and I love reading all the feedback, whether it be positive or negative. And I will be responding there over the course of the week. So thank you all. Love you. Deuces.